Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. A little bit of pit crew action going on. had a microphone that it. Oh, it just moved.
That's all right. It's good. All right. I won't move it. I won't all touch right. it.
The microphones are held in these in a metal casing with basically big rubber bands that allow the mic so that if we touch the side of it, it doesn't actually affect the sound quality. It's all very scientific. Until the rubber band breaks. And then, you know, you're off to the races. Hey, good morning. Welcome to us. Welcome to being with us. We are here on the 7th of July, and it's very nice to have you here. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then I'll let you know how you can get in on the conversation, and then we'll actually get into a conversation. Joining us for the discussion, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for fixing my microphone.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at it now. It already looks like it's been broken again, but that's all right. I don't know how much I fixed it. A little more glue, I think. Author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith is back. Thank you very much for being here.
This is my first light double.
Yeah, double round.
Thank yes. you very,
yeah, lightning round.
Very nice. It's very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And SUNY Albany Journalism Professor or University at Albany Journalism Professor?
Oh, yes, we got some comment on that.
Well, from your university.
That. Yeah.
There were people within the university that got mad at me.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
They said, you keep on saying that she's from SUNY Albany, which I thought was legal.
Whenever I work internationally, I say SUNY at Albany. They don't get you Albany at all.
So. Yeah. Okay. So, but then I have been slapped on the wrist. It is the University at Albany.
All right.
As long as you don't care.
But in this region, people who have lived here a long time will just call it SUNY Albany.
That's right.
It's like calling the South Empire State Plaza, the Nelson A. Rockefeller Empire State Plaza, the
now,
South Mall.
Right? We had two theories. One theory was that because Rosemary is such a force and such a star that they want the proper credit. The other was that they want us to use another name so they can distance themselves.
Who was that?
Right. I don't know. She works. I don't know. We're SUNY. I don't know who she is. So we weren't sure. But anyway, I just wanted to check with you. Rosemary Armeo is back, and we welcome you as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, we welcome you, the listener, to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And all you have to do is write to us, and we'd love to hear from you. Coming up, we want to talk about some interesting stories, some really heavy stuff today. I realized that as I was putting it together last night that we're talking about some really big stories. So let's begin. We'll start with the Greece bailout. We discussed the story at some length yesterday. Rosemary, you weren't here, so I'm curious as to your thoughts as we now move into perhaps another new talks about another bailout of let's try this again.
Yeah. It's a fascinating and involving political and economic discussion. The metaphor that I found that most works for me in explaining this, and stop me if you've already discussed this on the roundtable, is it's akin to what happened when we had our bubble burst here in real estate. Who do you blame for that? People who bought houses when they knew they couldn't afford it, when they didn't have the money and couldn't pay, or the banks who said, buy this house. We know you can't afford it, but it'll be okay. Who do you blame? That's Greece right now. Greece is at fault because it totally is incompetent and corrupt. It doesn't collect taxes. It has many problems. But the Europeans, the Germans and the French, who are making all this noise about big bad Greece or little bad Greece, they're the ones who let them do this, who lent money. Their banks did. It started with the banks who said, yeah, take money. They made money on each one of those transactions. And then when Greece defaulted, it got their government, the EU, to bail out Greece, which wasn't a bailout of Greece. It was a bailout of the private banks of Europe. And now Greece is saying, no, we're not going to cut anymore. And the Greeks have spit in the eye of the EU, saying, okay, yeah, all right, we have to get out of the EU. We have to lose the euro. Fine, we'll do it. And that is a problem for the EU far more, I think, than it is for the Greeks.
We touched on this yesterday, though, but isn't it a problem for Germany as well? I mean, it's a problem for everyone, isn't it?
It is. The problem for Germany, though, is I think they wanted to use Greeks as an example. There are, I mean, Alan poo-pooed this, but he's Sitting where he usually does, so I can say that.
Currently not present.
He is not present. So the problem is that Greece
is away, as they say on the BBC.
Greece isn't the only country that's facing these difficulties, and they're going to run into it with Spain, they're going to run into it with Portugal, they're going to run into it with Ireland, and they wanted Greece to be an example. Pay up, and that's how we take care of these things. Greece is saying, no. No, we're not.
Well, they're very different cultures. Germany and Greece.
Of course they were, but who put them in the same EU together?
Right, and that's really the challenge. It's the challenge of the United States of America. You know, we're very different cultures in different parts of the country. And Germany seems to want to impose its version of things, its discipline on Greece, where it really doesn't fit. You're right. Greece doesn't collect much taxes. They haven't cut pensions. People retire at a fairly young age, very easily. They just claim that they've been, that they need to retire for health reasons at age 55, and they generally get a full pension. I mean, there's a lot of complaints you can have about the way the Greek culture has cost it, cost the government so much, and is now leading to the problem. But there's sort of a backlash going on now, where a lot of people are saying that Germany is leading the charge of being too tough on Greece. Greece is really going through what is not like our recession in 2008. It's more compared to the Great Depression of the 1930s.
Yeah. Austerity could further cut growth in Greece, too, which the Greeks are aware of. And here's the other irony. Yeah. Germany's, for all of its austerity and discipline, Germany didn't pay its debts either. After World War II, horribly in debt, that debt was restructured. They did not pay back. So what Germany is asking Greece to do, it did not do itself, and is a success because it did not have to pay. So why are the Greeks so wrong for maintaining that, no, we don't want it to adopt the austerity you want to impose on us? And then the EU people, the rest of the EU, just miscalculated with Greece. That vote was 60%. It was not a close vote. And they were dissing the Greek premier and the Greek finance minister, who had been duly elected. The Greeks knew what they were doing. And that was seen as, okay, fine, you're talking to us and we're hearing you. So they backed themselves
into a corner here.
Both are backed into a corner.
But it does seem today, when this emergency summit takes place, that there's some level of a conciliatory approach that some are urging. And you're talking about a longer range restructuring that would let...
Correct.
You know, people have to realize that you've got to give them something more than just more austerity. It's sort of like our own people in Congress who are trying to impose, these rigid cuts in the budget when it really hurts people and it hurts society. You know, they've got to have some flexibility if they're going to get back on their feet.
When we try to understand big economic movements, national finances, we compare it to a household. But household finances are not the same as
they are
countries.
Not. That's a bad metaphor.
It is a very bad. And it's the same with this country, too. Like, getting down a deficit in a household, that's important. You can't be in debt in a household. But a country, you got to have a little debt, or you're just stagnant and you're hurting people. And the Greeks have played this, I think, really very well.
I did think it was interesting that following the vote and the referendum, there was great jubilation in the streets, and then there was sort of, you could almost see them kind of looking at each other, going, "Okay, now what do we do?
What is it? They can get $60 out of the bank per day?
Right?
That's it's dropped.
What's winning here?
Yeah.
You know."
And that's a good question for us to ask, too. You know, is it a bad thing that the EU is, kind of splintering a bit here? Other countries are looking at this, too. I mean, we have this going on.
Well, how would you feel if you were Spain or Ireland or Iceland, who've had to have very rigid payback, plans imposed on them by the EU, and then they see Greece get a better deal? I mean, it's going to shake things up in the EU.
Iceland was actually an example for Greece, I think, because they don't use the euro, and they devalued, and they cut back, and they went through a very short-term crisis, and they're doing okay now. Greece would not have that. Greece would have austerity for years, and it would not be the fast comeback that Iceland had. So
if you watch the 24-hour news channels, which I don't suggest you do, but if you do, it makes it sound as though, in a week, we're not going to be able to take money out of our ATMs.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and I just...
I don't believe it.
Well, no, but there's an hysteria that comes from what effect this will have on our economy. And so far, we have seen the markets fairly, you know, bumpy, but stable.
Well, in fact, it could hurt the... It could help, rather, the American dollar. If the euro's weaker, that's good for the dollar. And Greece has other sources of money, which we keep forgetting about. One of them are private hedge funds and other kind of economic instruments in the United States. So it's not bad, at least for the short term, for the United States.
What did the market do yesterday?
Was it? Oh, yeah.
It was down.
But not catastrophically.
No.
Right. The
no.
reason I said, oh, my goodness, is because I couldn't believe anybody would believe that. Not because I thought, oh, is that what's going to happen? Yeah. No, I don't think. We'll be able to take money.
The Russians are interesting to watch now too, because they're a source of potential funding for the Greeks, which of course intensifies the political battle that this has become. And then the other one are the third world countries: India, China, Brazil. They all have money too. What if they invested that in Greece? You could see the rise of a whole new block of countries. So I think the implications of this are enormous. I don't think they're all necessarily horrible for the United States or for Europe.
Is it in the EU's best interest to make it work?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so. Don't you?
Yeah, I kind of do. I think that exactly for the reason you said, there are others who could come to the aid of Greece, and it could really mess up the whole dynamic of the EU. And, you know, they'd lose a lot of momentum in their effort to unify the European countries.
Right.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get a letter or two, and then we'll take a news break and be back with other topics as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, featuring water in the garden all season with sculpture plants, education, and exhibits inspired by the role of water in the landscape. BerkshireBotanical.org. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation. Since 1996, Surgeon's Hands, Woman's Touch, CAPEK, plasticsurgery.com. Alarms of Berkshire County, offering full-service residential and commercial security and life safety monitored systems based on individual or corporate needs for nearly 35 years. AlarmsofBerkshireCounty.com. And Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, since 1996, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet. MannixMarketing.com.
Rainy town on a chilly autumn night, just you and I, and the wind just might just blow us down. How we laughed and laughed, we were falling in love, it happened just like that.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning, the 7th of July, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a few letters, like this one from Tom, who says, when did Germany ever pay back a loan? Don't they still owe from World War II? Julius writes, Iceland let their bad banks collapse, no bailout. Now Iceland is doing just fine. Too bad we didn't do the same. It's weird of what we refer to or what we consider to be just fine.
Yeah, just fine.
Hmm. I guess that's just, you know, not being.
You can take out more than $60 a day from your ATM.
Yeah, in comparison, what is just fine? That's pretty good, isn't
maybe,
it?
I mean, what has to happen systematically in Greece for it to be able to climb out of this terrible? I guess economic slump, this depression, as they're calling it. I mean, you know, does the government have to restructure? What about investment? Yes. What business investments need to happen for it to be more than tourism, you know?
They have 25% unemployment. That's
pretty
bad.
That
needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
We're going to take a news break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We have many other topics to discuss. And as I said, it was a very busy day, a busy news day, as it has been. Mike's got some interesting stories from the immediate region as well, which we'll talk about those. And we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith, and Mike Spain, all with us this morning. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. And let me just reintroduce the panel real quick. Rosemary Armeo is here, Barbara Smith, Mike Spain. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments roundtable at WAMC.org. First, we would like to just get to a letter or two. Chad says, the panel approached deeper dialogue when touching on Greece versus Iceland in their comments. One wish that the panel approach deeper dialogue when touching on Greece versus Iceland in their comments on the euro. I'd like a sentence or two, compare contrast of the two's condition vis-a-vis workout strategies.
I'll get back to you on tomorrow. That sounds like an assignment.
It sounds like homework,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, that's homework.
Okay.
They did go different paths.
Yes.
So, Chad, and maybe in the meantime, Chad, you could just Google that. but we'll get back to you.
That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's right. Or you can just, and then also, Josh says the people of Greece, by and large, have a cavalier attitude in regards to both work and paying taxes. The EU and Germany didn't create this behavior. They exposed it. Demonizing them for problems that Greece created is rather backwards and short-sighted.
It's absolutely true. That does exist. But Greece was exploited by German and French and other EU investors who knew about the problems and still put lots of money into it and made lots of money over the last few years. It's just like the banks who took advantage of lenders who are
in the U.S.
who wanted in the U.S. right, who wanted to buy houses here and should not have been allowed to.
Let's move on to a couple of other topics, and I think obviously one of the big ones that this is one of those stories that I just don't know, and maybe Rosemary, you can let us know why
you're relying on me.
No, I'm just Boko Haram. The violent campaign by the Boko Haram militant group against Nigerian civilians appeared to intensify late on Sunday with two deadly attacks in a city in central Nigeria, underscoring the challenge the country's new president faces in trying to suppress the group. The attacks killed at least 44 people and possibly many more. Gunmen and suicide bombers struck a popular restaurant and a mosque, shooting worshippers who had gathered for readings during Ramadan. The attacks brought the death toll from Boko Haram attacks in the last week to more than 200. If there is a terrorist attack in London that killed 19 people, we would hear about it 24/7.
Or 12 in France, for example.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I cannot wrap my head around how this happens. And we, as not just the media, but as a world
community
of people and of governments who are not rising up to do something.
Right, including other African governments.
Absolutely.
Who are just as threatened in this area. This Boko Haram is ISIS. They certainly are allies together. Remember that when they very publicly came together, it is a jihadist terrorism group. I think the reason we're seeing this new activity now is that the new government coming in came in specifically
to eradicate
Boko Haram. We're going to take care of this group. So they're fighting back. But there's no big response. I think our response against ISIS has been tepid and flawed. But in the middle of Africa, this is an oil-rich country too, by the way. So another reason that I don't understand why Nigeria gets such low priority in American foreign policy. China, though, has done nothing. It is heavily invested in Nigeria. The countries that surround Nigeria and Central Africa, who are also threatened, including Mali, have not been able to do much against this. And I don't think they're that strong. I think it's like ISIS. They're terrifying. They're very effective on the terrorism front. But they, with concerted action, short-term concerted action, could be routed. And we just don't have the will to do it.
I had the same thought when I read the article. Like, if this was another place, it would be top news. I don't know what page of the newspaper it actually appears on, but it just seems.
Well, I mean, in the Times, it was on the front page, but finding more information about it in this country, I think, is pretty difficult.
I think finding information about any place is difficult. We don't know a lot about it.
No.
We haven't, even in the Boko Haram, when they stole all the girls and
right.
that became
well,
a social media, right. that, okay, it was a lot of flash, but what did we really know about it?
And can you tell us what happened
no.
as a result of that?
No.
You know, some of the girls have been rescued and returned to their families,
Phew.
But most of them have not.
Right.
And some have been, you know, by different reports, become the brides of the Boko Haram
Yeah, which is
soldiers.
Such a euphemism.
Yeah.
That is a euphemism.
And, well, in any event, we don't know a lot about it. Mm-hmm. And is it partly because news organizations don't have the resources? Is it partly because in the West we just don't we don't think about other places that don't directly involve us and we sort of put it on a second tier? And
well,
I think that's
I
always
think,
been
I think all of the above. And it's difficult to report in Nigeria. It's difficult to get in there and to these are extremely remote areas. So just even if the government welcomed you and said, yes, come and do good reporting, it would be difficult. And then what does reporting do? You know, the impact of reporting should be to get government action. Do you see any movement by government to do something
well,
in Nigeria?
That's what I was saying. It's one thing on the press, and I certainly understand that, but you think, even with the article that we see on the front page of the Times this morning about this, that you would think that the world at large would stand up and say, well, this is something we have to do about.
Yeah.
Do something about.
Well, I think we have to look at the relationship of European Western nations to the continent of Africa. It's a fraught history. I'm trying to remember the title of a book. I think it's How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a pretty picture, that history of exploitation and colonization and imperialism and the kind of out of sight, out of mind that we
right.
seem to see.
Out of sight, out of mind. And then there's this appetite, there's not an appetite in the U.S. to learn a lot about a crisis on foreign soil and get involved in it. And aren't we doing enough? And we don't want to, you know, that's our trouble. We should never get involved in these foreign things. And,
unless
you know,
it's
an isolationist.
Israel.
Yeah.
Israel will get involved with. I mean, even Ukraine, which I've been screaming about for half
right.
a year.
There's no,
we
no
should be involved there.
Right. There's
We're
no
not.
Eagerness to get involved there either, right. even though that could be, you know, the beginning of the next right. Cold War, which
the,
I think it is.
The yeah. short term, the short-sightedness of that is so striking, though, because make no mistake, Boko Haram is another ISIS. It's part of this, mm-hmm. these radical extremist
terrorism.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and definitely Islamic, and that's a battle. I mean, the name of the organization is
what's
Western
it, some,
Education is bad.
Western
basically.
Education is bad, right? Yeah.
It's so you have the new president in Nigeria comes in, tries to make some headway in doubling up in the efforts and in mm-hmm. moving the. Where the task center comes from, the task force comes from, and there are those that say that what we're seeing these attacks is direct pressure fallout from the pressure that the additional pressure that's being put on them by the Nigerian government, which obviously is a catch-22 as well, especially right. when you're talking about civilian targets.
Right. That's what the previous government did. They just kind of pretended it wasn't there and hoped it would go away, and it got much, much worse. So, no, it has to be confronted, as does ISIS.
We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We move on to another story. And I'm fascinated by this story because we've covered it a little bit. And so I apologize if people think that you're because every time when we do things like that, people say, oh, what are you becoming, Entertainment Tonight? But this Bill Cosby story is fascinating.
Wow.
And I'm interested in especially for the journalists in the room to talk a little bit about what the Associated Press did here of getting this information. Bill Cosby acknowledged in a 2005 court deposition that he intended to give drugs to young women with whom he wanted to have sex. So this was 10 years ago.
Yeah, but it was a deposition that his attorneys ended up settling with the accuser out of court. And the deposition was temporarily sealed by the judge. What's amazing here is the Associated Press pressed the court to get the documents released. They argued that it was of an enormous public interest, and the judge went along with it. I think he had something, you know, profound to say, and he said that he was going to unseal the records because Cosby has donned the mantle of public moralist and mounted the proverbial electronic or print soapbox to volunteer his views on, among other things, childbearing, family life, education, and crime, to the extent that the defendant has freely entered the public square and thrust himself into the vortex of these public issues. He has voluntarily narrowed the zone of privacy that he's entitled to. And then with that, the judge made these records from 10 years ago public.
Have you hugged a judge today?
Right. Oh, my goodness.
It's remarkable that he made a judgment that, you know, Cosby is hiding behind, you know, the
his
court.
Image.
Right. Mm-hmm. And his public image prior to all this scandal coming out. And the judge is saying it's a compelling public interest to get this information
well,
out.
Well, thank you to the judge, but thank you to the AP, which persisted in this in the face of lots of criticism, including a ridiculous article in the opinion page of the Times Union about how poor Bill Cosby is a really nice guy. No one's ever proved anything. How do we know what these women are doing it for? And we should be nicer to him. So I am like so glad to see this come out because there is another side to the story. I would not like to be his wife, Camille, or Felice Rashad, who stood up for him.
Absolutely. Barbara?
I don't know what to say. One of the things I noticed when I saw coverage last night is that they showed photographs of him at his present age looking very, very, I don't know what word to say except for dejected and very.
I think he looks kind of evil.
Yeah,
He looks decrepit.
Right,
and
I think
that. Depraved.
And I think that people who don't know that history don't know what. Beacon he was at a time when black people weren't on television at all.
He was successful. This is not a charge against Dr. Huxtable.
That's no. I'm not talking. I'm talking about him being a comedian and being on a spy. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a breakthrough black entertainer to be in a lead role in a drama.
And in stand up and making great strides in that. I just want to get to. Quickly, what Rosemary said, though, about that, the videos that he put out over the last several months of the one really weird one with him in his pajamas. I mean, it's just strange. And it looked really weird. And I don't know how else to describe it than disturbing. That seems to be a fair assessment.
His advanced age, and this has got to have taken a toll. This has been hideously humiliating in public. Not that he doesn't deserve it if he's guilty, but nevertheless, I wouldn't be surprised if it's had an effect on his mental health.
And what I want to say is, like, despite the role that he played in, entertainment history and in black history and social relations at that time, we're talking about the 1960s, none of that excuses his actions, indeed they are, are true. So I'm just trying to give context to what kind of figure he was. That before Jell-O, before Huxtable, the Huxtables, et cetera, there was another era.
Right. It was a breakthrough when he was on the road as a comedian.
Exactly. But the thing is that exploitation of women and violence against women,
at whatever stage
of life or whatever, whoever you were, doesn't make any difference.
That's the amazing thing to me.
It's non-negotiable.
The person we knew him, we thought he was, and the outspoken person, society, and the breakthrough person, and all the positives that you described, at the same time, it's such a contradiction to what really may have been going on and appears to have been going on. I mean, in this deposition, he admits he obtained quaaludes to give to women so he could have sex with them, and that was his intention.
And you know, it also makes me wonder about the nature of this offense. It's an illness. This was a man who was incredibly good-looking, famous, rich. He could have had any woman in the world he wanted. Why was the thrill in drugging and exploiting them? Why is that necessary?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's a psychic disorder.
Yeah, that's
I agree with you.
Which also I just remind everyone that there is tape of him talking about this where he is making a joke about it, going back to the late 60s and early 70s, where it's part of his stand-up routine of the temptation of putting something
just
into
drugging her
the drink.
And getting her.
That's right.
Yeah.
He has, meanwhile, he continues to deny any wrongdoing, even though this has been released and he had admitted that he obtained quaaludes. And the What's the? I want to get to the specifics.
The story
here.
Also makes you hate lawyers, doesn't it? That they fought so hard because it would embarrass him. It would reveal things about his marriage and his use of prescription drugs.
Well, his lawyers fought to keep this deposition from becoming public, but right, it was a deposition made under oath in 2004 or 2005.
Yeah.
And his privacy, his personal privacy, ended up losing out to his public persona, according to this judge. That was an interesting ruling.
Right.
He gave Constant and Benadryl, an over-the-counter allergy medication, as well. I do want to say, when you got the Quaaludes, was it your? This is the attorney. I'm sorry. Yes, it was the attorney who said, "Was it your was it in your mind that you were going to use these Quaaludes for young women that you wanted to have sex with?" Cosby replied, "Yes." Cosby's lawyer said that he did not have Quaaludes during the time he knew the woman and did not give them to her. Cosby admitted in the deposition to getting 7 prescriptions for Quaaludes in the 1970s. He also admitted to meeting one identified woman after a performance in Las Vegas and offering her the drugs. "I give her Quaaludes. We then have sex," he said.
We also should note that the judge released only a small portion deposition. We don't know what's in the rest of it, and there's probably, but what's out is pretty damning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about other things, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Open Studio Tour, a self-guided tour featuring 16 artists in their working studios throughout Washington County, featuring paintings, sculptures, ceramics, photography, and more, July 18th and 19th from 10 to 6, studiotour.org for MAP. Harbrook Fine Windows, Doors, and Hardware, Albany, specializing in function and aesthetics, offering energy-efficient products and installation, windows and doors by Marvin and Integrity, harbrook.com. Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, and Rhinebeck, a source for organic and local fare, and in Rhinebeck, fresh made-to-order food at the Sunflower Cafe and Juice Bar on Garden Street, sunflowernatural.com. And the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting Dale Watson, Monday, July 13th at 8 p.m., thelinda.org.
Nobody's thinking about Wednesday. There's a good feeling here. Everybody simply put their cares away. No need to worry anyway tonight. Our work is through. We've all been lifted to a better place where we cannot fail. No feeling exists that can take the place. No one, no one's in a race tonight. Far from home, nobody knows us here.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We do have a lot of letters. I want to get to those real quick before we wrap up with a topic or two. Jim says, as a veteran of the Vietnam War and witness to all of our asterisk wars since then, I say we should stay home. We have done little good since World War II and let the Turks, Saudis, Iraqis, etc. do the fighting. Stay out of the Middle East. We got this letter who says, I just turned on the radio and heard one of your roundtable guests question why we never hear anything about events in Nigeria. If this happened in London, it would be on the news 24/7. I believe that was me. And another comment, is it because it's difficult to get news from places like Nigeria? That would be Rosemary. All one has to do is listen to BBC World Service. There's plenty of news about the atrocities in Africa. For example, the kidnapped schoolgirls, the U.S. just chooses not to broadcast it. And I think that was our point, was that getting that news in this country, but also the problems of getting the news out of Nigeria, right? Also, we got this from Ken, who says, we don't care. The old journalism saw, if it bleeds, it leads, means white people, not foreigners, people of color, shark bites in North Carolina, illegal immigrant shoots one, Kim Kardashian lays off implant injections and Botox while pregnant, mass murders in sub-Saharan Africa, crickets, crickets, crickets. Also hard
That's
to...
That's a pretty good letter.
Yeah, it's hard to...
yeah, you can't refute it.
Refute that, right.
And don't forget, now Courtney is broken up with her boyfriend. So,
my gosh.
I'm going to sound so old right now.
Kardashians.
Courtney who? Oh, okay, all right. I was like, Courtney Cox? No. Okay, no, Courtney.
You're dating Kardashian. Yourself.
I know.
I didn't know it was Courtney either.
thank you, Barbara. Yeah. If Greece somehow
managed... You guys
are
probably reading about Nigeria or something. I don't know.
Didn't you check out in the supermarket at all?
if Greece somehow managed to pay up, just who exactly, which people would get that money? Would it be individuals who do not have any bread to eat today, or would it be just another loaf to throw in the trash heaps, helping to fuel faster climate change? And in general, why is debt such a good thing anyway? Are creditors doing anything to help the world besides trying and often succeeding and avoiding paying their taxes? Ted writes, we are no longer...
Communist wrote that letter.
Ted writes, we're no longer responsible for our own actions. The banks made us take the mortgages. The tobacco manufacturers made us smoke. The auto companies made us buy big cars. The big box stores made us abandon local retailers. Strong influences? Yes. We will increase the opportunity for positive change when we add individual responsibility to all the dialogue and debate. Ryan writes, it's simple. In order for a government to act, people have to ask for it. So in America, you're asking working class folks who have to pay bills, soccer games to go to, long hours at dead-end jobs, and many other issues to deal with to worry about something that they just don't have the space in their lives to worry about. That in regards to Africa. We go to the Bill Cosby letters. Tina writes, Cosby says, we had sex, not acknowledging that what he was doing was rape. Drugging a woman equals rape. Bonnie writes, panel members, he offers a sociologic insight into just how personable predators can be and how long they can keep their act up. This never was a black versus white issue. It was always male versus female. And we also got this from Robert, who says Cosby is a violent rapist who will probably avoid prison because of the statute of limitations. Too bad. Hopefully those victims who are suing him civilly will prevail and get monetary judgments that pauperize him. And that is a question that we've addressed in this program about the statute of limitations and why that does exist. And I think that is it for the letters. Except for this one from Tim, who says economist Thomas Piketty gave an interview in Germany 2 days ago in which he pointed out that Germany's insistence on full repayment is a double standard. Had Germany not had their debt restructured and 60% forgiven post-World War II, they would probably still be struggling today. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Mike Spain, let's go to you to find out about, so in Albany, as I know this is an issue that goes on in many communities throughout our listening area, about how do you get people from running red lights. Albany is starting to install their first red light cameras, but fewer than originally expected.
Yes, that's correct. The first red light cameras are going in at the intersection of Shaker Road and Northern Boulevard. That's according to the acting police chief, Brendan Cox. And they should be up by the end of this month, and a few others will be up throughout the city. But they're backing off installing as many as they originally had planned. They're installing about half or so, and they want to see how it's going to go. But these cameras will take a photo. They're working with a private vendor, a Dutch firm that does a lot of business in the U.S. on this. And if you run a red light, it'll take a photo of your car. They'll recognize your license plate, and they'll send you a bill for $50. Send the owner of the car. So if you're not in your own car, the owner of the car, like if I borrowed your car, Joe, that you'd get the bill for $50, and you'd have to come after me for it, I suppose. And the city hopes by doing this, it will make people slow down at intersections, although there's some history that it causes more rear-end collisions because people are stopping where they wouldn't have stopped because they're afraid of getting the $50 fine for running the red light. But it's the first one in the capital region, first community in the capital region to do this, and everyone will be watching it closely.
The thing about rear-ending is really disturbing, right? Because it's true.
Yes, yeah, statistically.
I mean, you see someone behind you who's on your bumper, you know, and you think, I guess I better go through because if I stop now, they're going to rear end me. It's horrible. It's so horrible.
Which is kind of a good excuse, except you can't give it because this is a powerful tool for traffic courts, the only court in the land where you are guilty. You are not innocent until proven guilty. As soon as they have a ticket, a picture, they use it against you. I think this is, like, really not good news.
Yeah. Well, the city is hoping that they can raise some revenue and that they
Oh, yeah, that's what we want to do.
Yeah, right.
Driving,
pay some bills. But primarily better police these dangerous intersections.
Right. And I just want to disclose that I do work for the administration of the city. So my remarks are just personal. I am concerned about being rear-ended myself.
And do not reflect the city at large. Mike Spain, Barbara Smith, and Rosemary Ermeo, thank you all very much. We're out of time, but really wonderful to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.